Welcome back to Canucks Talk here on Sportsnet 650. Jamie Dodd, Thomas Drance live from the Kintec studio. 650, 650 is the Dunbar Lumber text line. Metro Vancouver's trusted choice for contractors and rental warriors for over 50 years. Visit them at one of their three locations to serve you or online at DunbarLumber.com. This hour of Canucks Talk brought to you by Rack Steel. Rack Steel offers industry-leading heli forklifts and engineered racking solutions. Visit them online at racksteel.com. As I mentioned, now less than 48 hours away from the NHL trade deadline. And obviously in the crossover, you know, we touched on a bunch of different things. Pugh Suter, Brock Besser. Could they be exploring even other things beyond that for the Canucks? You have a piece up at The Athletic, I believe it was published yesterday, about what you're hearing about the Canucks' plans as the NHL trade deadline approaches. And
yeah, so what do you want to know? Hey, for our listeners, what follows is going to be the unsexy truth of what the club is thinking.
Well, no, because if I was
I'm not linking names. I'm not speculating. This is just like where the club is at. The unsexiest, most up-to-date intel on how the club's posturing.
I mean, sexy is in the eye of the beholder, man. That's what I tell myself anyways, but
I don't lie to myself that way, but I really appreciate your self-confidence.
That's the difference between you and me. But if I could sum up your article in kind of one way, it would be that.
Try one word. And I'm going to limit you to one word.
Price.
Yeah, that's right.
And I think you might even say that.
Actually,
so I don't know.
I wouldn't have thought of it that quickly. You're good at this.
There you go. But I think
you're having a strong day. I'm just saying, you're on it today, bud.
Wow. All right. A lot to live up to now for the rest of the show. But Mike, the urologist from Brockville, texts in, is there any chance this management group pulls a Benning and does not move Suter, Forbort, or Besser? How much power does management ever actually have in this organization to cash in on assets before a trade deadline? And the sense I got, because there's been so much concern, so much talk, so much, you know, getting pre-mad or trying not to get pre-mad about the idea this week of them holding their UFAs past the deadline in order to chase the playoffs, right? Like, oh, we got to get those two games of playoff revenue so we can't trade Suter, we can't trade Besser. The sense I got from reading your piece was, yes, there's a chance that they might hold on to those guys, but it won't be out of a kind of monomaniacal obsession with just making the playoffs. They will only hold on to them if the prices certainly just simply aren't good enough. What other teams are offering isn't good enough. Is that a fair kind of way to summarize what you're hearing? That it's not so much about, oh man, we really don't want to trade Brock Besser when we're in a playoff push. If he ends up staying, it would be more of a case of, you know what, teams just didn't offer what we think he's worth.
Yeah. Yeah, I think they're, like, you know, there's a bit of a mad scientist element to timing these things, right? And I think the Canucks are positioned in such a way where typically this organization, this management team, would like to get proactive and conduct their business well ahead of time. They don't really like to work to the deadline. You know, you've seen like some minor trades occur on deadline day across their, what, four deadlines in charge here. Curtis Lazar would be like the biggest one we've seen. I mean, not exactly, you know, speaking of sexy, not exactly sexy in terms of deadline day moves in this franchise's history. But I think that this deadline necessitates something of another approach. Now, I went over in the crossover the idea that Besser could end up being one of the top scoring wingers available for teams considering adding that type of player to their lineup. Mm-hmm. Jersey would meet that description. Vegas would meet that description. Minnesota would have. They went out and got Gustav Nyquist. Tampa Bay would have. They went out and got
Florida,
Oliver
potentially,
Bjorkstrand.
I would put in there.
Florida, maybe. Maybe. I mean, I guess they have a lot of cap space, right?
Yep.
So maybe Florida. You know, so... But Mikko Rantanen, Rickard Rakell, those Utah would be another one that I think is interesting to monitor here.
Now that gets interesting, though,
Ottawa,
from a Canucks perspective.
Ottawa would be another one that I would monitor here. LA. Sorry, Utah would, because you'd be empowering.
Because then it's not just you're weakening your team, you're empowering the team that might be the most dangerous to catch you, right?
So that might, is.
I know that's your perspective, but you know what I mean?
Like fact.
That's a different thing.
Fact. I'll never quit my Utah Hockey Club. So anyway, I think more than anything, the Canucks are going to try and wait out the winger market because there's a chance that Besser emerges in 24 hours as the best option for teams working to the deadline. And there's a chance that he doesn't, and that could obviously impact the price of the break.
Yeah.
They effectively think that the longer this goes, the higher the return, potential return for Besser.
And I've heard people describe the situation between the Canucks and Besser as kind of a game of chicken and contractual negotiations, right? Who's going to blink first? I also kind of get the sense, though, that the Canucks' stance and their messaging to the rest of the league on Besser is now kind of a bit of a game of chicken as well, right? As you describe, like, hey, they're putting it out there. We're fine keeping them. If you guys don't meet the price, we'll keep them. Great. We'll try to push for the playoffs. Maybe we can even extend them at some point. We don't have to move him, so you better pony up and actually give us a good deal worth making the move for if you want him.
Yeah, and I mean, there's an element to which I'm sure there's negotiation, but I also do think the club genuinely believes it. Like, they don't feel a ton of pressure to sell at any price, given the fact that they could be a playoff team, right? Given the fact that they still believe that they could be a playoff team.
Mm-hmm.
That said, I do think the Hughes injury situation and the Demko injury situation have tilted the balance of probabilities. Right, I think this organization's, look, these guys know what they're doing for the most part, right? Like I might disagree with some of their bets or some of their approaches, but we've been talking about, I've sort of had this new checklist across the course of this week, which was the goaltending situation I'm worried about,
yep.
The Quinn Hughes situation I'm worried about, the Elias Pettersson situation I'm worried about. They're worried about the same stuff, right? Like, how could you not be? How could you not be? And as a result, I think there's an understanding of this team's reality. The spent force theory that we were going over yesterday, the idea that the Canucks are probably better than this, but might not be able to be better than this across the stretch run when they need to be.
Yeah.
I don't think the club's throwing in the white towel or anything. Like, I think
throw in the towel, you wave the flag.
I know, I had Roger Nielsen on the mind. It's Canucks talk. And anyway, they still want this team to achieve down the stretch. They still want to make the playoffs. They still want to win a round. But, you know, I think they are realistically ready to look a little bit more with a little bit more urgency toward the future, and they sort of have to. And so the Besser file is the big one. And, you know, I'm not one who really buys the, like, disrespect thing,
mm-hmm.
just because I think there's a material difference on price. And I think Tockett's commentary about Besser benefiting from playing with JT Miller, I think, speaks volumes in two different ways that have sort of tilted the shape of these contract talks. The first is that by trading Miller, you enter a new phase of your team building cycle, a more transitional phase, where all of a sudden, you know, the marginal value of retaining Besser because of the chemistry that he has with Miller, but also because of what it means to your cup chances in the first 2-3 years of a long-term deal, you know, once you trade Miller, that incentive, that marginal value is massively reduced,
mm-hmm.
right? And now all of a sudden the risk on the tail end of his deal becomes more decisive, right? Becomes a larger factor in organizational decision-making. The second is, you know, if you're valuing Besser as a standalone offensive driver, then you get into that Timo Meier. You get into that $7 or $8 million with term range. If you're viewing him more as a complimentary top of the lineup winger, a la Tyler Toffoli, what's that? 6x4 in a flat cap environment, maybe 7.5x5 or 8x5, kind of what they offered. You know, like that to me, that speaks volumes. There's just a material disagreement. Besser, by the way, should be, given his track record and how important and rare these UFA opportunities are, like, you know, fair play to him, man. Go get a square deal. You deserve money.
As I said in the crossover, this is perfect. Like, no one's at fault here between Besser and the Canucks. It's like, yeah, he's got to do what's best for him, and they got to stick to their valuation on the player. And if those things are different, then there's no agreement to be made. That's fine. That happens. That's why guys get to free agency sometimes.
No one should bash a player for looking after their own rational self-interest over the course of a truncated professional hockey career, in my view. And nobody should bash a team for being like, hey, look, that risk, in our view anyway,
mm-hmm.
Exceeds our tolerance at the moment with where we're positioned. So I think it's pretty unlikely that the two sides come to terms. I do think there's a world where the market for Besser, which was described to me as lukewarm at the moment, doesn't heat up sufficiently. So the club decides, hey, look, if we land that second round pick for Brock Besser and a prospect we don't even love, we can't turn around and flip that for something we do like. We're better off keeping this group together. You know, we'll have contract talks in the summer and maybe things change. But realistically, we accept that this relationship is probably better than even money to be over, but we still want to make the playoffs, and we're not going to do a deal that doesn't make sense for us at a low price, you know, despite the sort of dynamic here. I think there's a chance that happens. I do think the more likely outcome is that the club trades some rental players, and with Besser sort of being at the front of that line.
Yeah, and Gerp from Surrey texts in, because we started this conversation about, like, okay, if the price is there, and he says, how can prices not be good with what we see teams getting in returns for their players right now, though? And there has been this idea that it's a seller's market out there, right? No, the prices are pretty high, and I think Gerp's onto something there. Like, if you're saying, okay, we'll only do it if you meet X threshold for Besser and Pugh Suter,
yeah, you're probably getting it.
Seems like that threshold is pretty likely to be met.
I would expect it to be, and that's why I'm sort of handicapping it the way I do. Right?
Yeah.
Now, I know, like, this is a time of year where it's very easy for people forecasting to look foolish. So I'm going to put it as, like, just like we're talking probabilities here. I would put, let's say, like 10% of an extension over the next 48 hours, like, pretty unlikely.
Wow, that's even higher than I would think, but I guess you're building in the uncertainty there, and it's the Canucks.
Yeah,
and
exactly. That's fair. I mean, things, or player, like, the thing is that the player does want to stay.
Yeah.
And the Canucks are open to keeping him at a reasonable clip. Like, Besser wouldn't be the first guy to, you know, sit down with his family and his loved ones and say, like, do we just want to get this done? Do we just want to get this done? It's still generational wealth. Like, we love it here. Let's just do it. Right, that wouldn't be the first situation that. So I'm going to put it at 10%. Let's put that at 10%. Let's put a trade at 50, and them keeping him at 40. That's kind of how I'd handicap it at this point. If we're trying to forecast what to expect trade activity wise over the next.
So narrowly in favor of a trade, but
yeah, better than even money.
Yeah,
but not an overwhelming favorite at this point.
Interesting.
With Pugh Suter and Derek Forbert, I would put it at closer to like 5% either extends. I don't think those are being worked on actively. So, and there's been less talks. So it's not like there's an understanding,
right,
or a framework for a quick deal to come together. So I'll put those at more like 5%. I think the club is comfortable keeping both of those guys if the prices aren't met. Once again, I think they believe that both players have enjoyed it in Vancouver, that they're also pretty settled, and then if they keep them past the deadline, there's a pretty good chance of getting those deals done. In Suter's case, I'll put it more like 60% that he's dealt. In Forbert, more like the 50-40 split, just because I think the Canucks are aware that Suter's doubling his salary on his next contract, and I don't get the sense that they're willing to go there. So that, to me, points toward a deadline exit as a greater likelihood for him than it would for Forbert, who's more likely to be like a flat. You know, like, he probably is going to earn the same amount on his next contract. And, you know, club values like that professional defensive defenseman play that he brings and you can rely on getting from him for, what, 50-ish games a year. So that's sort of the situation with those guys. Soucy, I don't have as good a handle on. That's a three-dimensional deal because of his full no-trade clause. I think the club's been in and out in terms of being, like, happy with his performance and then annoyed by the lack of fire in his game at times. Obviously, it's crowded on the back end now. I do think jettisoning a defender makes sense before the deadline, especially with the Tom Volander dynamic, especially with the Victor Mancini dynamic, especially with the Elias Pettersson dynamic. So, Elias. I got it right?
Yeah.
Sick. So, that's sort of where the Canucks sit. Lekkerimäki being up, by the way.
Yes, I was just going to say, I know you have some intel on that in the club's perspective as well.
Just that, like, obviously, performance is going to dictate.
Don't do
it.
My job. Let me tee you up.
Sorry,
I'm joking.
Just that. Lekkerimäki called up yesterday. Going to play on a line with Hedl and Drew O'Connor tonight. I think the club is very hopeful and believes that he can seize this opportunity, which he does, in fact, have to seize. This is not a gift.
Sure, this is not. You're an NHL player now,
but this is an important audition. This is a real look that he's going to get to remain with the NHL club for the balance of the season.
Mm-hmm.
The club believes that he's at that level. They believe that he can help. And he's going to get the opportunity to make that case himself with his performance between now and game 82. So this matters a lot. All of that said, in the event that Besser walks, either this week in a trade or as an unrestricted free agent in the summer, finding goal scoring is now, like, finding goal scoring and finding a center, and ideally finding a center that can help you score some goals, is mission one, maybe mission two and one for the Vancouver Canucks between now and whenever they succeed there, whenever they get to the point where they've built up their forward group to the point where they're happy and comfortable and optimistic about it like they are on the back end now, finally. And so, you know, I do think the Lekkerimäki audition is impactful and meaningful and a huge data point for us. This club has him in their NHL plans for next season without question, but don't get confused and consider him to be like a quote unquote Besser replacement.
Well, yeah. Yeah. It's not like you're like, okay, and now we don't have to find a top six guy. No. It's like, no, he's reinforcement. He's not the only thing you're counting on.
You want him to be like a middle six spark plug.
Yeah.
Right. And grow accustomed to what life and producing in the NHL looks like. You don't want him playing 20 minutes against tough matchups, battling night after night against the best defensive pairs in hockey and having the success or failure of your team on his shoulders. That's mm-hmm. not a position which is fair to put a player his age into anyway. You know, I mean, that's not a fair position for Connor Bedard to be in, right? Much less Jonathan Lekkerimäki. So that's sort of where the club stands. This is definitely an eyes on Lekkerimäki performance or sort of stretch run beginning tonight. I'm going to go ahead and say, I think he's ready for it.
All right. I'm excited. I've been calling for this for a little bit, and no surprise that it happens. I'm excited to see what he can do.
He's going to play well.
Trade deadline coverage on Sportsnet 650 is brought to you by AJ's Pizza on East Broadway. For diehard pizza people, order online at AJ's.pizza. Can't find the latest episodes of your favorite HGTV, Discovery, and Food Network shows? Rogers Xfinity TV has the newest seasons of the top-rated shows on these popular channels, while other providers are no longer including them in their TV lineup. If your TV provider doesn't carry these channels, you're missing out on new seasons of Celebrity IOU, Hometown, Beat Bobby Flay, Expedition X, and more. Don't be fooled by other channels pretending to be these networks you know and love. Get the latest with Rogers Xfinity TV at Rogers.com. Jason Bukala joins us next here on Canucks Talk Sportsnet 650.
Miss any part of Halford and Brough in the Morning? Subscribe to the show wherever you get your podcast, and don't miss an episode.
Canucks Talk here on Sportsnet 650. It's Jamie Dodd and Thomas Drance. We're broadcasting live from the Kintec studio. Kintec Footwear and Orthotics working together with you in step. 650, 650 is the Dunbar Lumber text line. Now joining us, as he does every Wednesday at this time, from Sportsnet's NHL coverage, and of course also a former director of amateur scouting in the NHL, he is our guy, Jason Bukala. Books, what's going on, man?
What's going on with you two guys? I can just tell you're carrying on. I can feel it.
You know what? You're on to something, Books, because we were having quite a chortle there before we turned the mics on and came back.
We were talking about the Tampa Bay Lightning, the newest inclusion at the Contenders I'm Taking Seriously table.
I think they can
beat Florida now. I wouldn't have said so 3 weeks ago. I think this trade is perfect. Absolutely perfect for them. I think Bjorkstrand gives them the right-handed shot they've needed desperately on power play one.
Power play.
Man, they needed it desperately. And people will hate taking Brandon Hagel off PP1. I get it. But it's not about Brandon Hagel, as good as he is, as much as, like, I think Brandon Hagel belongs on Canadian currency and would have my vote for prime minister. I mean, it's about Kucherov. It's about creating the lanes for Kucherov, the best power play operator I've ever seen, and you need a right-handed shot at the left flank to do it. Yan Gord, I mean, there's no better center that we're going to see move if he's healthy, right? I mean, look, there's risk there, but it's an upside shot, a guy they're familiar with, a guy who plays with the sort of dogged mentality that Cooper values. That forward group is nasty. I still worry a bit about the mobility of their back end, but I worried about that with Team Canada too, and Cooper pulled it off. And then Vasilevsky's turned back the clock. I mean, why is this team any worse than the second or third best team in the East? And I don't see the case.
I everything you just said right there, I 100% agree. Like when I watch Brandon Hagel work the strong side on the power play, and we watched it for years, seeing Stamkos rip pucks from that side, or even just dust them off real quickly and work them back up top and to the opposite side, whatever it was. It doesn't look as comfortable when there's a lefty on that side. So absolutely, Bjorkstrand's going to fit right into that. And I don't know, who knows what they're going to do with their power play. They have an embarrassment of riches there now to kind of point, obviously, Bjorkstrand, Hedman up top, Kucherov on the one flank. I don't know. They just came off an eight-game heater. They lose a rivalry game against Florida 2-1, and then they rebound real quickly with a quality win against a really upstart Columbus team who's been playing very good hockey. Beat them 6-2 last night. So they're, I think Vasilevsky, guys, is south of 2.0 goals against, and somewhere between, I think it's around 945 save percentage for like a month and a half. Like this is elite goaltending.
Yeah, and getting hot at the right time or close to the right time anyways for
Tampa.
He's
the best in the world when he plays like this.
It's pretty terrifying.
He's still the guy you pick. One game against aliens with the fate of the world on the line. Who are you taking against Vasilevsky? Or who are you taking over Vasilevsky, Books?
You're not.
No.
That's an absolute fact. And you know what? The thing about him is, you love the way that this guy's programmed. He wants the net every night. He's not one of those guys that says, when I want to get, you know, a night off for load management or whatever the case may be, forget about that. He's like, I want to play every game. And it's going to be fascinating in the Atlantic because, Florida's loaded up here and they're going to do something else. You know that with the money that they have left on the books. But having said that, how would you like to be sitting in the Toronto Maple Leafs conference room today when you're seeing all this going on around you in that division? Because they have very little draft capital. They have no cap space, well, very little cap space. And of course, their prospect pool is pretty pedestrian. So,
Easton Cowan, turn your phone off silent, bud.
Yeah, but I got to tell you, boys, Easton Cowan's got some. He's had a tough year. He's had a tough year in my books. I love this kid. I've spoke very highly about his draft and development, the trajectory he was on. But I watched him through a segment of games, both live and on tape here recently, and he did have a hat trick the other night. But he's got to get back to being the player he was when he got drafted 28th overall, which is that interior tenacity. You know the way it is, guys. We preach this, the three of us together. Maybe I preach it more than anybody else, but you got to have a B game in the NHL if you want to have success, and you got to be, got to work. And he's just been okay. Where Fraser Minton has gone by him right now for me on prospect projection there with the Leafs. So
yeah, good Vancouver boy though. That was always going to happen.
That was always going to happen.
The West, man. You can't, like, why are you drafting out of the O? Just draft the dub kid. Hey, okay, so I just want to get your reaction in general to this, because I'm seeing a lot of conversation in our inbox and on Twitter from Canucks fans who are looking at the multiple firsts that the Seattle Kraken just got for Bjorkstrand, who, by the way, has another year left on the deal. That's an important part of what the Tampa Bay Lightning just did.
5.4.
Yep. A pretty good number for a really reliable, like, defensively responsible, right-handed 20-goal scoring winger, consistent 20-goal scoring winger, too. The one popular reaction is seller's market, trade everything that's not hammered down. But the thing is Tampa always pays a market price that makes everyone lose their mind. It's like the fifth straight year where everyone's like, oh, Tampa Bay overpaying for a guy. And it's like, no, they're not. They know exactly what they want. They struck out on Janot, but you'll strike out once of every five times to get the Paul Coleman, Gaudreau, Gord, sorry, not Gord, who's the other, Hagel hits, right? Like, that's the cost of doing business. I don't think this price is something anyone should take to the bank as expecting anyone else to necessarily have to pay between now and Friday at noon. What's your take on this?
I think it's just a reset on the roster, and this is the cost of doing business to get where they want to go. They really do. They have zero draft capital left after this. They don't. Them and Florida have something in common. They have like zero, no first round picks. I think for like the next 3 years, something like that.
But Tampa doesn't have a Samuskevich though. They don't have a guy with juice.
Well, okay, I'll give you that for now. I'll give you that for now, but. You know what? You look at that roster, and you gotta make hay. This is a reset. They moved on. They made some hard decisions last summer. Obviously, moving on from Stamkos, for example. But now, when they bring in these guys, like they know what they get in Yanni Gord. You know that Yanni Gord's going to be, when he's healthy here, the best version of himself. And he's such a hard out that he's built like a fire hydrant, and he never goes away. I love the way he plays on the inside. And you know, last year he had, I don't know, 156 hits or something. Like, he's always in it, right? And his pedigree in the faceoff circle hovers around 50%, which is good. This is the cost of doing business when you feel that you're tracking. They're 16-6-2 in their last 22 games, guys, and all of their metrics have trended way up as the seasons got harder. So they're all in. Go for it. I'm okay with that.
So from the Canucks perspective right now, as we sit here, you know, less than 2 days to go before the trade deadline, I think Brock Besser top of mind. And we haven't really started to see the trade market totally heat up. Obviously, there's the Tampa moves today. You know, Florida acquires Seth Jones, but we're waiting for that real flurry of activity. What would you expect Besser's value to be around the league? You know, if maybe teams aren't calling today, but certainly by noon on Friday. I mean, what kind of market do you think there will be for Besser before the trade deadline?
Oh, it's a tough one. I really believe that it's polarizing for a lot of teams. So depending on the makeup of your group, if you're a team that that wants to play a track meet style, i.e. like a Colorado Avalanche, I'm not saying he's going there, but I'm just trying to paint a picture here. You know, does he fit into a situation like that? I would argue that he does, because all you have to do is get into the right areas and people will make you better when everybody else is tracking really quickly around you. If you get into another situation where the team wants to wear down the opponent, i.e. more like a LA Kings type of a roster or something like that, I don't see a fit necessarily, because that's not really what he does. So not sure where that market is going to go. I you guys got way more intel than I do. I listen to people like, obviously I listen to Elliot because you know, he's the godfather for us. My understanding as I sit here today is that your owner of Vancouver wants this team to make sure they're in playoffs. And if anything, he wants to add, not subtract. So my gut as I sit here today is this could be an own rental type of a situation with Besser, and see where it goes after that. Because if that's what your owner, you know, the way that's gone in the past, your owner, all owners have a lot of say in what the general manager and the president are going to do. But if he's thinking you got to be a playoff team, I don't see them subtracting him off the roster without an addition coming back with terms. So it's going to be a hard deal, I guess, is what I'm trying to say.
Yeah, I think the fact that Quinn Hughes is now banged up and his status uncertain tonight, he's not playing, might not play this weekend. I think the Demko injury uncertainty, right? He was supposed to be back after the road trip. He's not back at practice yet. I think that's changed the dynamic a bit. I think the Canucks are in a spot where, you know, they're not going to give these guys away from the thick of a playoff chase. Like, they're not in monetize at any price. But I think they'll make these moves, provided that the market, you know, is decent enough for a Besser, a Pugh Suter, and a Derek Forbert. That's sort of the latest I'm getting, Books.
Okay, so if I take that as the gospel for now, then you got to start looking at, you know, there's going to be a team that might want to acquire Besser that is looking at potentially, like, maybe like the Minnesota Wild are looking at something like this and saying, like, can we get a deal done in the drawer here? Like, is there something, is there a fit, and how can we make that happen? The fascinating thing about all the transactions that we're seeing here, guys, is the willingness for a third team to get involved. Like, it's incredible, isn't it? Like, we look at cap value on the surface, but then we start seeing, like, to me today, the Detroit deal with Tampa, with Gord landing there first and then going to Tampa, at $1.3 million, like, it's fascinating to me how some teams will spend like $500,000 to acquire an extra pick in the middle of the draft, and then you're going to get some other teams that are spending this kind of dough to get pick up extra draft capital, or in New Jersey's case, pick up Scotty LaChance's son, Shane LaChance. You know, New Jersey picked him up, and that cost them basically $500,000. So the reason I'm positioning it like this is because that, when you start talking about Besser and you start talking about, well, where could he end up? You know, that contract's probably going to have to land in a couple of different spots before it gets to where its end game. And as I sit here today, Minnesota has value, or they have enough money on their cap that they could acquire him. It's just that, what are the Canucks looking for in return? Because, you know, I have to believe they're looking for not picks, but bodies, and hopefully bodies with term on their contracts.
Yeah, and we've certainly heard that the Canucks are interested in, you know, that kind of mid-20s player that they think has maybe room to grow but is also under team control. Obviously, we get why they're interested in that player. Those are hard to find, and specifically, like, how difficult is it to do that deal at the deadline as opposed to potentially in the offseason or at the draft?
Hard. Yeah, hard. It absolutely is. It really depends on the team that's receiving a player like Besser in relation to their trajectory. Like, if you're struggling in the power play, for example, or you're struggling in components of your game, and you feel that you can sacrifice a guy off your lineup in another area, a checker, for example, or maybe just a heavy guy like a Jakob Trenin type of player, you know, a guy who plays big, strong, heavy, hard minutes, maybe you're saying, well, we can massage this to make it look still pretty good for us, then it's a little bit easier because, you know, you understand that you're still moving forward. You're not taking any step backward. Nobody ever wants to take a step backward in a trade, but when you're kind of shuffling the deck chairs around a little bit, it does get very, very difficult, very convoluted. And especially when a team like Vancouver is going to want, like I just said, somebody in return, I believe, with some term that can hit their roster and still keep them in the mix. But, you know, the way you guys are positioning this, you know, with Hughes and Demko, and, well, you know, we haven't even talked about Pettersson. I don't really want to talk about him. He came out and he said what he said the other day. He just needs to be better. This is not the year for the Canucks, guys. Let's just be honest. It's not happening. So, you know, if I'm in the Canucks room and they're asking me on, I'm trying to get the very best deal I can for Besser to move him out. That's what I'm doing. I'm trying to get somebody to eat all the money, to be honest with you, and see where I can maybe go somewhere else on another trade.
One thing we're going to see tonight, Books, is Jonathan Lekkerimäki play with Philip Hedel and Drew O'Connor, an afterburners line in the Canucks top six. My understanding is, while this isn't a gift by any means, like, Lekkerimäki's about to get an opportunity to make the case that he should play NHL hockey for the balance of this stretch run here. Like, that's what this is. What do you expect? Is he ready for that based on what you've seen from him at the American League level?
It's still some growing pains there, guys. The consistency, the pace of the game at the NHL, and the bump and grind, it kind of takes him out of it sometimes. But there are moments, too, that you see that flash and dash. I would position it like this. I like the sounds of that line. I'm curious to see if the size and the growl on that line can open up more space for Lekkerimäki so that he doesn't have to grind on the wall as much, and he might be able to find some more quiet ice where he can get a puck on his stick and rip it on net from a more consistently high quality scoring area. Hedo's been good that way, hasn't he? With his length and his size, it's totally changed the look there. And I'm curious to see how this goes. Is he totally ready? I'm not going to go out on a limb and say that. He's going to have to prove it to me still. But the tangibles are in place. Maybe we just got to find the right fit, you know, line mate wise. I like that group. Now that you say that, like, I'm picturing that in my mind. I like the feel of that. There's going to be some compete there, a mix of pace and puck skill. I'm curious to see how that goes.
Yeah, and with Lekkerimäki, I mean, it's interesting because I don't think anyone expects him to come in and be a fully formed NHL player right now. But from an organization's perspective, does there almost come a point where, okay, you've developed in the AHL, you still have to develop, but now it's time for you to learn at the NHL? And how hard is it to identify when a player's kind of at that point where it's not as if you're going to step in and be a star right at the NHL level on day one, but the learning you have to do, maybe you're better suited to do it at the NHL level now.
Yeah, that's a tough one. Again, it's just going to depend on, there's so many moving parts when it comes to that. So it's hard for a young player to play free into his exact identity when everything around you is still, I am going to use the adjective chaotic. It's unpredictable. Let's just say that. Like, there's not a lot of protection in the lineup, right? So there's not a lot of distraction from the Pettersons of the world. For example, if you're the opponent of the Vancouver Canucks, and let's say that this line strikes goal tonight, they're really good against Anaheim. Well, now, next time up, and if Pettersson doesn't play well tonight, that line doesn't play well, the next opponent's going to key in on you, which makes your life exponentially more difficult. If you get my drift, there's not a lot of continuity there. So it's not easy. I see the premise of it, though, because you got to sink or swim eventually.
Yeah.
But this is the hardest time of year, guys.
Books, we've been talking about, you know, the Pettersson factor, the Demko injury uncertainty, and the Hughes injury uncertainty. Plus, like, the Demko injury uncertainty has to also be added to the fact that Kevin Lankinen is getting very close to setting his career high in games played in a single season. In fact, he will do so when he starts tonight.
Say, he's got to be right up against it by
yeah.
now. Yeah.
So he'll have... Yeah, he'll be at his most games played ever in his career after tonight. He's going to blow by his career saved, like his career shots faced number over the next month. So you've got, and honestly, we've seen some signs of sort of wearing down, I think, in moments when Lankinen's been overused, and I don't think that's going away anytime soon. So, sorry, I'm bringing all this up because you've got the Lankinen fatigue factor, the Demko injury, the we don't trust she loves of it all in goal, their best player hurt, and Pettersson a shadow of himself. And so I've sort of been calling this the spent force theory at this point, Books, where I don't think the Canucks are as poor a team as this season's results will ultimately indicate, but I also don't think that they can be better down the stretch, or at least I'm not willing to bet comfortably on it relative to, like, Calgary or Utah's positioning. What are your thoughts of sort of how the Canucks stack up in the playoff race? They're still favored by the gambling markets, but I'd be very nervous to place any money, if I even bet on hockey, on that.
Yeah, no, I wouldn't be laying a nickel on that, to be perfectly honest. I don't trust the I can't figure it out for the life of me. You know, even after we dissect all the distractions, excuses, whatever you want to call it, and now you're getting into that situation. You just brought up a fascinating point. I don't think people like Casey DeSmith, you know, he was decent, right? I think we would all agree that, but his threshold was 28 games. Same as Anthony Stolarz in Toronto right now, threshold 28 games. So I'm curious to see where Lankinen, he's actually surpassed it when you think about the high leverage at the Four Nations as well. So, you know, what does that take out of you? I'm curious to see where it goes. Yeah, I'm with you guys. They're in survival mode. It says something about the quality of the lineup, really. And people are going to throw the coach under the bus now and again or whatever. But honestly, how many other coaches in the league could have kept the team this afloat or this close to being relevant with all the stuff that's gone on there? Not too many, I would argue. I think this has been a hard job to coach this team this year. So, but there's got to be an end game here. I wouldn't be betting a nickel on them getting in and winning a round. I really wouldn't. Could they surprise me? Yeah. Is it likely? I don't think so. It's the never end. We've been talking about the same stuff since October. It's kind of nauseating, but it's a fact.
I want to ask you about tonight's opponent for the Canucks, Books, which is the Anaheim Ducks, the rematch from their recent road meeting against the Anaheim Ducks, which did not go well for the team. But one player on the Ducks that is turning heads around the league a lot recently, and especially last night, 3 points in that drubbing of the Oilers, is the defenseman Jackson Lacombe, young defenseman. And, you know, if you were sitting here before the season kind of rattling off the list of exciting young talent to watch on the Ducks, I'm not sure Jackson Lacombe would have been kind of top of mind for a lot of people. But as I said, he's on the radar now. What do you see? What do you like about his performance this year?
So I've always liked Jackson Lacombe going way back to his draft cycle before he went to play college hockey. The one thing about when he went to the U, Minnesota, that is that Jackson Lacombe is an excellent skater. Like, I mean, he's a fantastic skater. So agile, quick to space, hit it with the puck, hit it without the puck, you know, all those types of things. What he didn't do exceptionally well before, guys, was he was just an average plus defender, like an area defender. What the Ducks have done really well with him is they've built him up in reverse order. So you know how so many prospects come into the league and they play just to their strengths and you kind of you sink or swim on your strengths? What they've done is they said, listen, pal, we need you to do these things better. Call it the B game. Your B game's got to improve a lot more for us to trust you, to thrust you into the most comfortable situations for you offensively. So when he goes off and he's got starts to produce his offense, I think his offense is coming from better defending. And he's a really good story. The Ducks, they've been drafting high for a long time now. But this guy's like a plus player. I just looked him up real quick when I was doing this on my game reports. 21 minutes a night plus nine being used in all situations. Boy, oh boy, he's on the rise. That's a really good player, and I'm not the least bit surprised. He's a grade-A prospect who's tracking to be a top-pairing D eventually for the Ducks.
And speaking of the beatdown they put on the Oilers last night, how concerned are you about Edmonton as we sit here, what, I don't know, 6 weeks before the playoffs start?
Terrified.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, I, you know, I'm curious about teams that so they added grit up front. Max Jones isn't going to play in the NHL unless there's something, you know, Max Jones, a big body, plays fast. He doesn't think it quick enough for me. It's a real problem. You add Frederick, he's got the grip, but boy, oh boy, we got problems between the posts. And more importantly, just as importantly, they're missing that identity in the back end defensively. So yeah, I don't, the Oil, I'll put it this way. They wouldn't scare me a lot in the first round as an opponent in the Western Conference. As a matter of fact, I think they're ripe to be taken because of the glaring weaknesses in their lineup right now.
Yeah, they're not fast enough up front. Like losing Holloway plus Fogle and just like sort of trying to replace them with older guys. Like, I don't know.
It doesn't work.
I don't think they understood what made them good last year.
And why this is the risk in punting out or not matching young talent.
McLeod, they were prioritizing vets who didn't make mistakes over the guys that gave them the gear where they couldn't be skated with. I just think they missed.
All 100%, you're 100% right. All Holloway did last year was pursue it, bang people, and extend plays with his physicality, all that kind of stuff. Like, he was always in the fight, and he didn't score a lot, but they didn't need him to. McLeod, same thing. F1 on the forecheck. Get in on the contact. You know, he couldn't put the puck in the ocean for a while, but it didn't matter. Like, it wears down your opponents, that speed and tenacity. And, of course, Broberg, I don't know how much more trust you can get in a defenseman when he gets thrust into the playoffs and plays the way he played, and then you don't. So, yeah, I mean, they're going to look back on that, and they're going to ask themselves, what could we have done better, I'm sure. But for us out here, throwing rocks at the glass house, it totally changed the identity of the team. And you're right. Outside of a few players up front, they're slow. Yeah. Like, the Oilers, they do not play fast enough.
It was one of my big offseason takes was the Oilers have gotten too slow. And I'm not, I still think they're the best team because the two guys do their thing. But I thought that was going to be an issue further down the lineup, and it's been a bigger issue than I expected.
Yeah, no, I agree.
Books,
but, you know, more importantly for us here with the Canucks, as we talk about it, I just, you know, guys, it was late early, you know, like we started talking about a lot of this noise in November, and it just keeps getting later and later. So the trade deadline can't come quick enough where they can at least just take a look and say, this is what we got, and here's what we got to do for the remainder of the season and then reset in the offseason.
And we will dissect it with you, whatever they do next week on the show. Books, enjoy the trade deadline, man. Looking forward to chatting next week.
Awesome, boys. Thanks a lot for having me on. Enjoy the rest of your day.
That is Jason Bukala from Sportsnet's NHL coverage. I imagine he'll be a part of the big trade deadline festivities on TV on Friday. And, of course, a former director of amateur scouting as well. We'll take a break. We'll do the whiteboard, probably an abbreviated edition of the whiteboard, try to get some Rick Tocchet audio in on a game day here as well before we end the show. That's next on Canucks Talk Sportsnet 650.